Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Middlesex County Cricket League podcast. My name's Dan Huff from Twickenham. We are in October, so the Middlesex League feels like it's a long, long time away. We've only had 3 or 4 weeks, but the nights are drawing in, the clocks will soon be changing, and we'll all be getting ready to watch cricket at odd hours of the day and night around the globe. But there's still quite a bit, I think, that we could talk about to do with the last season, some of the highs, some of the lows, a bit of a wash up, look at our predictions and chew the fat on a whole range of issues. And of course, I'm not going to do that on my own. Sal Ali's with me here from North London. Sal, how are you?
Dan, listen, those sun-baked evenings on a Saturday, sitting in clubhouses, supping a, you know, a nice drink, analysing the day's play. And long gone, aren't they? I mean, we're now into the doom and gloom months, aren't we? These are the ones I really, really hate. So especially what's going on, you know, all over the world or even in this country, for instance, makes things very depressing. So hopefully we'll pass by quickly and we're back on the pitch enjoying our cricket again. But yeah, it's going to be a tough few months ahead, I think.
Yep, I think you're right. Although saying that, there has been quite a bit of interesting cricket on the TV in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, I'm instinctively not a massive T20 man, but we've got a T20 World Cup coming up. England have just finished a 7-game series in Pakistan, and I watched quite a bit of it, Sal, actually. The 3:30 start time is brilliant for me with my kids, because basically come home from school and we can get a good hour, an hour and a half in before my wife decides we watch too much TV and turns it off. But yeah, so I've watched quite a bit of it. Have you? I mean, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I really got into it. I mean, being Pakistan heritage, so one, it's great seeing them back in Pakistan playing cricket in any kind of format. You know, Pakistan fans, they absolutely adore the English. So as you can see, four houses, you know, lots of different ages watching cricket. So that's great to see that back in Pakistan sort of shores. In terms of the series, I think it was brilliant. You know, both sort of clubs, both sides, sorry, experimented. I think England have got real fun in Harry Brook. He looks a real good batter.
Looked a good player, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he looks someone that could be, you know, in the World Cup could be useful. Pakistan obviously have two world-class players at the top, but the rest of the batting does need some work. So I'm sure they both, you know, got lots of sort of useful, you know, bits of info as they head into the World Cup, which is, I think starts, is it a week's time or 2 weeks' time, roughly?
Yeah, I think it's a two-tier thing, isn't it? I think there's a little bit of qualifying goes on first and then the apparently more senior nations join in later, but it'll be on us before we know it. And I don't know about you, Sal, but I've got a pretty tricky winter ahead politically. I mean, we've got the T20 World Cup followed by the Football World Cup. You know, it's going to be sport galore. And of course, the Football World Cup's going to kick off at great times, late afternoon and in the evening. So yeah, I'm going to have to get negotiating to get as much of this on my TV screen as I possibly can. I have to agree with you about the Pakistan thing. I went there 17 years ago to watch England play and saw England get absolutely battered at the Lahore Stadium in a great test match that Shoaib Akhtar bowled like the speed of light. And it was phenomenal. And I think it's brilliant to see four houses and good games of cricket. And the thing about Pakistan, of course, is they can be brilliant or they can be rubbish. And they can often do it within the space of about an hour. So there's always plenty to watch, isn't there? Do you think they've got a chance in the T20 or just not quite consistent enough?
No,
in the
World Cup? There's not enough depth in that batting. You've got Babar Azam and Mohammad Rizwan at the top, but beyond that, they've showed in this series itself, there's no one who sort of comes in and does that kind of roles that, you know, England have got people like Stokes, Butler in the past, even Morgan is now not playing no more, can come in and get quick runs, but useful runs, middle order. Bowler's not too bad, but, you know, you're playing in Australia and you've got to be looking at the sort of like, you know, Southern Hemisphere sides. Was it Northern Hemisphere? Whichever one in England coming. I think that kind of, yeah, if you use those kind of conditions on a regular basis, you've got to be one of the favourites, I think.
I think that's a fair call. I mean, as much as I love watching Pakistan play, I'd be quite surprised if they end up winning this trophy. But you can remind me, I've just said that, when they lift the trophy in a couple of months' time. But I definitely wish them well. I also went to another game, Sal, between now and the end of the season. And that was, it was actually my birthday. I took my twins to Lords on the 24th of September and came away. And my twins are six. It's the first time ever at the home of cricket. And they loved it. It was quite a nice warm day. And what was I explaining on the way home? Mancads to six-year-olds. And did you see the incident with the dreaded mancad?
I mean, I didn't watch it live, but afterwards you couldn't miss it, could you, really? It was all over social media.
You couldn't,
you're
right.
It was rife, wasn't it? Did you tell him to call a run-out, not a mancad, Dan, get the terminology right?
No, I didn't. No,
he's failing there, mate, as a dad, you know.
And we were Googling Vino Mancad in 1957, I think it was, that he did it. And so actually they know way more about mancads than they should do, really. But yeah, of course, a run-out now and... She was out, wasn't she? The England batter. There's no way around that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one, isn't it? We spoke off air about it, didn't we? You know, if it was 16 or 7 balls and it happened, it's not a discussion point, is it, at all? No one even talks about it. But just due to the situation, the game where England, you know, could have edged home, it took place and it was, you know, as I said, rife on social media and all over the news, which is a bit sad because, you know, we love our cricket and... For some reason or another, it was sort of creating negative headlines and, you know, when you get all these discussions on social media which extend from being a sport into cultural and political aspects, which are, you know, that's not what it's about, is it really?
I don't need any of that nonsense, yeah. Exactly. And of course, it deflected from the fact, it was a good game of cricket, Sal. Not many runs scored, but it was an absolute rip-snorter. England were on the verge of pulling off a shock victory, but people not talking about that anymore. They're talking about the dreaded run-out that took place at the end. But one other thing about that day, I was really sort of quite pleased to see it, is that, I don't know if you're aware, but Middlesex are awarding caps to those who they've neglected to award caps to in years gone by. And quite a lot of those are Middlesex women. And so we had six people from Twickenham there collecting caps that they should have got literally decades ago. And they were by far from the only ones, a whole host of people there. And it looked like a really good day. It was sort of reunion of old friends too. And I was quite impressed that Middlesex are doing that. And I see Surrey are doing it as well. They're giving caps to women who've played for Surrey in decades, years gone by. And I assume most counties will do now. And I thought it was a good thing. And if anyone from Middlesex is listening, I raise my cap to you, as it were, because I thought it was a good do.
Sounds right. Sounds good.
Yep. All good. No complaints there. Back to the County League. Well, obviously, we haven't had too much cricket on the field to talk about because it's the close season. But one of the things we thought we would do was just talk a little bit about the predictions we made at the start of the season. And I should give you a big old-fashioned drum roll here, Sal, because you sort of stole the show, didn't you, really? I mean, there was four of us who were on that pod. There was me, Sal, there was Sahil Kerr from Acton, who knows Division 2 very well. He writes a weekly review of Division 2. And Matt Robinson from Actonians, who looks at Division 3. And we all sort of sat down, scratched our heads, proclaimed we knew what we were talking about, or didn't really proclaim that we knew what we were talking about, but made some predictions. And you did pretty well across the top four divisions, Sal, right? Talk us through what you predicted and what happened.
So I won't trouble too much, but yeah, so I went for 10-10.
Just take the facts, Sal. The facts speak for themselves. Don't worry.
That's true. I went for 10-10 in the Prem, who obviously were champions. Now, unfortunately, the one prediction just fell by the wayside in the last sort of day of today's cricket. I'm playing Winchmore Hill here. They're now in my bad books because they should have been in Bronsby on the last day. The game was in their hands. It looked like they're going to beat, you know, Bronsby and they're in second place. But Bron obviously got up the line and were champions. And I had Finchley as my prediction, who came second by 1 point. So not too disappointed about that. Division 2, I went for Harrow Town, who were convincing champions this year. So well done to Harrow Town. And Div 3, I went for Wickham House, who also were crowned the victors of that league. So yeah, in the top four, 3 out of 4 and 1 runner-up, not too bad.
That is pretty decent. And I'll carry that on for you, Sal, because Besborough were your tip in Division 4. And Besborough, they had an almighty great charge in the second half of the season and narrowly missed out on promotion. They scored a shed load of runs, you know, a couple of ridiculous totals, you know, well north of 300. And I think the season came 2 or 3 weeks too early for them because they were flying. So that they were not far off. And it was a similar sort of story, if in different circumstances, with Stallions in Division 6, right? They finished mid-table, but they didn't have to finish mid-table, did they?
Well, that was my pick. So Stallions were my Div 6 pick. I was actually pretty confident before the season started, so I did sort of a bit of research on them and knew some of the players have played at a decent level in the past. So you're thinking Division 6 would be far too easy for them. But then they had sort of internal issues and they, you know...
A small amount of 60 points deduction didn't help, did it?
Yeah, exactly. So that didn't help at all. And then they had two games where they won the game with awards to opposition. I think there was an issue about the ground and one they conceded. So in total, 80 points that they could have played for if they played by the rules and did the right thing. They could have picked up and they would have made them level with the winners, Super Kings, and won 4 or 5 points. So that's the one that got away, I think, because just in terms of, you know, Stallions, next season, get your act together, guys. Come on.
Yeah, sort it out, Stallions. Yeah. Come on.
I think I'll stick with them next season if they're still around. But yeah.
Well, I think others might follow your lead there with Stallions. And also, to be fair, the only one you've not mentioned, Division 5, you went for New Calypsonians, which wasn't the worst choice in the world. They were definitely towards the top half of the table rather than the bottom. I think they finished fifth in the end, but definitely looking up rather than down. Yeah. So I'll say it for you. That's a pretty impressive set of predictions, Sal. Your cricketing badgerness definitely came to the fore there, because that really is a good set of predictions. Others did get stuff right too, though. If I got this correct, certainly Sahil Kerr from Acton, he got a couple right. He went for Wickham House, like you did, and that obviously came up trumps. He was very much cheering Bronsbury's last day victory. Well, I suppose he was, because he plays for Acton, but certainly it worked out for him in terms of his prediction, because he went for Bronsbury. And he also went for Shepherd's Bush, which they didn't win the league, but they had a very good season. And no one else amongst the four of us went for Shea Boo. So they were on the podium at the end there. So I think Sahil's two correct predictions, and he went for Stallions, just like you did, was good. And he went for Old Eyes or Worthians in Division 4. And they finished second, and they didn't have to finish second. They might well have pipped K-plus at the post there, but they didn't quite come off. So Sahil's definitely not quite had as good a season as you, predictions-wise. But respect you. A lot of impressive performances there. Robbo, he got one. He got one right. He went for, I'm just remember who it was now, Teddington. So he got Teddington spot on. And then a range of pretty good suggestions. He went for Old Eyes of Worthy in Division 4. He went for Kenton in Division 3. And, you know, again, all sides who went up, both of those two, but they didn't quite win the title. And Acton, he went for in Division 1, who were definitely towards the top. You know, they ultimately missed out, but were there or thereabouts. That leaves just one person in the four, Sal. Yeah, he didn't do so good. Let's just say I'm not going to fill in the National Lottery anytime soon, because clearly I'm pretty rubbish at it. So mine were pretty disastrous across the board. I think the nearest I got was Swami Bappa in Division 5. Well, I thought they had a pretty impressive season. They did very well. And they did sort of think about going for the title, but ultimately didn't quite get there. And I think they finished third. So that was as near as I got to the top. I thought Headstone Manor was a particularly good choice in Division 4. Do you not agree?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they went down. Yeah, so yeah, that went well. London Tigers, bit hit and miss in Division 3, but it ended up towards the top of the table. But I was hoping they might be a bit stronger. And Southampton and Acton didn't quite work out in Division 1 and 2. And Ealing, well, yeah, Ealing didn't have one of their better seasons either. So I'm going to write this one off, move on. And think about next season already, because that was, a pretty disastrous set of predictions on my part. But some otherwise pretty good ones from our, I'm not going to say experts, that sounds far too pretentious, but from our badgers who are interested in these things, it shows that they, you and Sahil in particular, might well be worth listening to when it comes to your knowledge of the league. So well done there. In terms of the next thing I thought it might be useful to cover, if you go to the Middlesex County League website, then all four of the people I've just name-checked there, so Robbo, Sahil, myself and Sal, have done a team of the year for the various teams that we've been covering. Now, not going to go through all of them because, well, you know, they're on the league website and they've been there for a couple of weeks, so you can have a look at them yourselves. But was there anything you wanted to flag up in the Premier League team of the year, Sal? Any names that you perhaps didn't expect to be coming up with, or sort of people who were particularly impressive? I mean, I guess Joel Curtis is the obvious first name on the list, right? And he had a phenomenal year. But anything else that you think is worthy of note there?
I mean, there's a couple of positions that which I found pretty tricky. I mean, the batting almost picked itself in some ways, because you've got Joel, as you mentioned, Steve Rheingold, Michael Levitt from Stanmore. The one I sort of was sort of toying with the idea of Joe Carrasco sort of were in the middle order for me, so I went with him. But we did have Harry Evans from Teddington, Sam Samai from Hampstead, and Adam London from Richmond, who also performed Adam Reed this season. So that was one of the tricky ones. And also, the slowest start's been out. In the last 2 years, Apps Karana would have been straight away almost the first time on the list. But this year, he didn't take as many wickets as he does normally in the past. So he was in contention along with Ben Lockrose and Abdul Nazir, who played for Hampstead and Teddington. But I went for Apps just on the basis that he's just so hard to get away. I definitely feel Prem side, when they play against him, their game plan is to just almost just see him out if it's a limited overs game, or if it's timed overs game, just don't take risks and try and get runs from the other end. I mean, the fact he's bowled 50 maiden overs this year kind of highlights that, really. So he got the job of left-arm spinner on my side. But yeah, that was a bit of a trick because Ben Lockrow is a fantastic spinner. I think his stats in one-day cricket were not as good as time cricket. That's what swung it for me regarding him, just in that situation where he's very good in the time format, whereas in the one-day format, he didn't get as many wickets as maybe he expected to. And Abdul Nazir, again, good left-arm spinner. He's done really well the last couple of years. But I just went with that bit of experience. And Apps actually can hold about as well. He's got 50 against Tennyson this year as well. So he's showed that he can...
Oh, he's competent.
Yeah, so he can get some runs. So that was the two sort of positions where I was, you know, not 100% sure until I did some research and looked at stats and, you know, came up with what I thought was probably the best choice. But again, this side I've got is a fantastic side. And as Dan's mentioned, going to the league website, I'm sure some may disagree what I've done. But I think I've given each player a reasonable argument why they should be picked. Have a look and see what you think.
I think that's absolutely the case. They're there to be criticised, and rest assured, mine has been. but in very fair and logical ways. I found it really hard, Sal, and I found it really hard when I did 12 months ago and 24 months ago as well, because picking a cricket team's not just about the statistics. It is about thinking about other things that go on. And much as I follow Division 1, in my case, I don't actually see that much of it because I'm either playing myself or I'm involved in Twickenham in some way. So it's really hard. And I was, as soon as I published it, I had sort of buyer's remorse because I wasn't quite sure whether I got things right. For example, I ended up picking three left-arm spinners, but I simply couldn't leave any of the three left-arm spinners out.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it was, you know, I wouldn't really want, as a captain at least, to be going into a side with three left-arm spinners. It wouldn't be the way I'd go. But, you know, you got Kwar Kazmi at Harris St Mary's. Alex Brennan had a fantastic year at Acton. He's now got 339 league victims, which is pretty decent in the great scheme of things. 37 this season, an average of 14. You know, it's you know, impressive stuff. And then the overseas player, Abe Titmuss at Winchmore Hill, another one who bowls a lot of overs. But if you look at his stats, 45 wickets at an average of 20. It's tough to leave these characters out. So they're in. But I can see a case for saying I should have picked two just because three left-arm spinners is probably not what you'd ideally want to go with. In terms of my other bowlers, Will Jones from North London was the first one I had on the list. Also bats a bit as well, from what I understand. Yeah. You know, positive character as well. He manages to get quite a bit more out of other players, which is always useful. And, you know, he took 27 wickets at 14. So fitness concerns are there. But in terms of the best bowler in the league, well, I think Will Jones is in the discussion. So I couldn't leave him out. And Adam Copley at Bromsbury, another one. He's a top bowler, but so is David Burton at Finchley. Both of them had really good seasons. 41 wickets for 39. I went for Copley, but I'm not really sure why. There's a feeling on it, really. But Burton could quite happily be very, very grumpy about not being in the team because he took 41 wickets and did really well. So I found it all very hard. And that's even before I thought about the batting. The sort of easiest one for me was James Overy. One, he got a lot of runs, and two, he's got a track record as captain. I know he can be grumpy, and he'd be the first to tell you that, but in terms of thinking about cricket, overs does a lot of it. But Sahil Kerr's at number four. You know, he's got a happy knack of scoring runs against good sides. And he can captain, you know, a captain's acting anyway. So he would have been an option, but I went for James as the skipper. Tom Pettit was in there at three from Harris St Mary's. Little bit of a chameleon type batsman, can be brilliant. A couple of centuries with 130 out in one. But also as a couple of lean weeks as well. But he'll probably win you two or three games a season. And I quite like that. You know, players will win me points. So Pettit in there. Forrester from Winchmore Hill, just a solid season. Fifth top scorer in the division, 600 odd runs. Couldn't really find a way past him, really. So he was in there. The one mistake I think I've made, and I feel a bit bad saying it, Lucas Carlisle at number one, great season. But I think ultimately I probably should have gone for Finchley's Geeshan Herath. Good player. But had a really bad August. Didn't score enough runs. Well, didn't score any runs, really, in August. And I think that swayed me towards Carlisle, who was more consistent. But I think Herat had a good season. Strong case to be in there. So I'm almost sort of a bit defensive about my team because I can see loads of ways that it's wrong, Sal. I don't know if you had any angle on Division 1, if there's anything that you saw there that you thought you could have been done differently.
I mean, what you could have done, pick 12. I always like to have a squad of 12. Oh, so you could have popped in Herath or Burton into that set of 12 players.
Yeah. Or a squad of 16,
I don't go that far. But still, I mean, I think Division 1 is a tough one because there was no real outstanding batters like we had Ryan Golden, you know, Joel Curtis and Steve McGiffin and Moran in the Premier Division, who scored a load of runs, where there was consistent players in Division One, but no one who actually really sort of blazed away and sort of got away and got to that sort of, you know, almost like four figure mark. I mean, the bowling in that division, I think that bowling is a Prem lineup, really. You've got Copland, Jones, who are two fantastic team bowlers, Kyle Kazmi and Brennan, really experienced cricketers who know what they're doing, been this and it, done it. And Tipness as well, you know, he's proven in the last 2 years he's been at Winchmore Hill what top player he is. And what would be interesting to see who bowls first out of the three spin bowlers, who gets the ball first? Who'd you go to?
Toss of a coin. No, I mean, yeah. I think it depends a little bit what you want to do. I think I find Brennan to be a bit more of an attacking bowler. I'm not sure how AB would describe himself, but I think if I need a wicket, so I might go to him first. He seems to have a good strike rate. If I want control, I'd probably go to Tipness. Not that the others don't have control, but he bowls a lot of overs and doesn't concede many runs. So that's my instincts, but I mean, I'm prepared for anybody to tell me I've got that wrong. But that'd be, I think, what I'd do. As I say, I'm quite happy to be persuaded that I've got that wrong. We're not going to go through the other sides that are up there, but there are sides up there for Division 2 and Division 3. Have a look at them. Tell us what you think. Both Sal and I will be at the annual dinner. So if you want to bend our ears on those, then buy us a drink and we'll listen. Will be the deal I'd want to strike. But in all seriousness, do let us know what you think of those things. While I've mentioned it, annual dinner, Sal, it is on the horizon, right? What do we need to know about that?
So it's been held at the Lord's Nursery Ground, mm-hmm. and it's taking place on October the 21st. I think clubs have received some kind of allocation with their, you know more about than me, Dan, to see an 8-year-old club secretary. How's it work?
Yep, you should have received information from the league on this about getting 2 tickets per team in the league. So Twickenham have got 5 teams, so we've got 10 tickets. And because it's at Lord's, it is a bit more expensive than I think many people might want, but it is what it is. I'm not my job to cost these things and to complain about them. But certainly the league will need to hear from you quite quickly. We're recording on Monday the 3rd of October. They'll need to hear from you within, I think, before the end of the week about how many tickets you want. So if you're planning to go, get in touch with the league about this. If you've got questions about it, get in touch with the league about this and do it soon, because clearly plans are going to need to be made. And I think, you know, Lord's is the home of cricket and all that shebang. It isn't the worst place in the world to be having an annual dinner. So fingers crossed that as many folks as possible can get there. We've certainly got a big enough league. You think we should be able to get a few people to attend an event like that. And of course, if you're picking up a pot, then it is a very good place to be. You know, go there and get your award at the Nursery Ground at Lord's if you've won the league, if you're in one of those teams. So clubs like Old Eyes or Worthy and Sal, they should be there. 4 teams, 4 promotions. If they're not there, then they're doing it wrong. But yeah, if you've won an award, then it'll be there that you get it. Cool. Thinking of other numbers, those of regular listeners will know that we did each week talk about highest and lowest scores. And I thought it might make sense to just run through some of the highs and lows there. It won't take us long. Sal, can you? The highest score of the season was by a first 11, and it's a pretty ridiculous score, right?
It was. Just before you carry on, Dan, and also with the league's 50th anniversary, so it's a league dinner for that occasion, and also it's an awards night. So it's got 2 nights for the price of 1, effectively.
Yep.
So yeah, it's been 50th year of the league, as we know, and that we also celebrated.
Well made. Yes, yep. That's also another good reason to go. Yeah, exactly right. Cool. Now, if there was an award for the top scorer in the league this season, and I don't think there is, but if there were an award, London Super Kings would be getting it, wouldn't they?
Well, they'd be getting it for 2 reasons. One, for the highest first 11 score, and also for the highest MCCL top scorer. And it was 442 against Northumberland Manor, who didn't sort of take it lying down, and they did gave it a good shot and responded with 332 for 9. So yeah, that honour goes to London Super Kings this season.
Yep. I mean, we said it at the time, because this was back on the 10th of July. I remember talking about this game. How on earth do you start chasing 442 when it's win-lose? Because of course, even though most of the league is playing win-lose-draw cricket in July, they weren't. Division 6 was win-lose all the way through. So you sort of haven't got that much choice. You've got to go crash-bang-wallet from the beginning. And it looks like Northolt Manor did at least try to do that. A couple of honourable mentions to Richmond, really. I mean, I know Richmond 1s and 2s have not had the best of seasons, but their 5s and 4s have scored a few runs, because on the 15th of May, Richmond 5 scored 413 for 5 against Southampton 3s in the Division 3 of the third tier, which is worthy of mention anyway. You know, it's a massive score. But the week after that, Richmond 4s nearly beat it. They were 404 for 4
against Winchmore Hill in Division 1 for the third tier. So within 7 days, Richmond 4s and Richmond 5s have scored 800 runs between them, which I thought was pretty damn impressive. I don't know how many players played in both of those games. Quite plausible that some did. But nonetheless, 413 and 404 in 1 7-day period for Richmond 4s and 5s. Decent effort. Other end of the spectrum, some sides didn't do quite so well. What was the lowest score in the first 11 comp this year?
So, Dan, before we get on to that, I just want to entertain you with, I've just got a scorecard up from that game, London Super Kings.
Oh, go on.
Norfolk Manor. Yeah. You had one guy, Niraj Raj, 78 of 35 balls, 6 sixes and 6 fours. Abnas Vikram, 114 of 62 balls. Mm. And this is the fact that you'll love the most, Dan. You know how much you love extras and wides, etc.
In
the Super Kings innings, there were 71 extras in total. And in the Norfolk Manor innings, there were 64 extras in total. So, what's that,
130-odd.
Yeah, not bad.
And they finished at 11:30.
That's what time they finished, yeah.
My goodness. If anyone from Super Kings or Northolt Manor played in that game and they see me at the annual dinner, tell me what time you finished, because it has to be being pitch black. It's amazing.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Great stuff. Okay. I should have looked at the game with the most wides all season. That can't be far off, can it, actually?
That's got to be a contender, definitely.
Yeah, it's got to be, indeed. The other end of the spectrum, the lower scores?
Yeah, so Titans had a rough season this year. So hopefully next season things get better for them. And they had a bit of a tough day out against Eastcote, 37 all out in 14 overs. And Eastcote got there for the loss of no wickets. That was a game where young George Harvey carried his bat. He carried a bat, I suppose, when the game's over like that. Yeah. And didn't score a run, but obviously...
I salute him. As an opening bat, I want that on my CV. I carried my bat and we won the game for naught, not out. It's just brilliant. Absolutely phenomenal. So that's... Yeah, and they weren't the only ones who got 37 all out, were they, Titans? There was two sides who ended up with that.
Okay, I've got here, Dan, St Newton. Yes, yeah, so St Newton, actually, yeah. So a bit of a rough day for them as well. So against SKLPCCC, St Newton 37 all out, and SKLPCC comfortable winners as they scored 207 for 9 batting first. So, yeah, that was a bit of a tough day at the office for the St Newton boys.
Yep. And I always think August is that you're getting into the period of the summer where you're scoring lots of runs. But I suppose it's also a holiday period, isn't it? There's also other things going on. So that maybe would explain why sides are really struggling to get people out. And perhaps they're getting struggle to get batters out. And perhaps that explains some of these low scores. Because we did have quite a few in August that were close to that. Although the lowest score in the league across all of the tiers was in July, wasn't it? 4th of July.
It was indeed, which were 6-7 played Crouch and 6-11, which were 20 all out, and having seen Crouch and post 171 all out. So, yeah, that was a bit of a disappointing day for the Winchmore 6 guys.
Yep, the only way is up, as Yaz once said in the 1980s, after something like that. Having said that, there were a few 20 pluses. I think it was a 28 and a 29 as well, but Winchmore Hill sort of take the metaphorical crown now with 20 all out. There's always next week, as they say. Any other numbers that caught your eye throughout the season? There's a whole range of stats on there. Paul Smith does a phenomenal job with stats on the website. But if I was to ask you to pick three numbers that would define your season, what would they be?
I mean, one of them would be, for me, I know Joe Curtis has got applauded this year with batting, and rightly so, and some of the stuff he's come up this year has been unbelievable. But, I mean, Steve Rheingold, 96 average, like 96.09 to be precise.
And he hasn't played four games, has he? Or five games? This is a proper average.
He missed two, yeah. He missed two this season. I mean, that's phenomenal. That is phenomenal. I mean, this league is one of the toughest, you know, you'll get in Premier League cricket. And to achieve that just shows what fantastic player he is. So that's one that I really sort of found really impressive this year. The other one, which was a great partnership beginning of the season, first game of the season, Harrow went and took on Eden Trailfinders. Eden Trailfinders, newly promoted, probably thinking, oh, you know, let's see how
welcome
things
to
all
the
about.
New division, fellas. Yeah.
Exactly. Welcome to Tade Carmichael and Ronan Etienne, who put an open stand, I think it was in 346. It may not be an open, it might be somewhere, but anyway, huge score. And I've umpired Etienne. And that guy, when he gets going, he's an absolute monster. He hits balls everywhere. But he was actually outscored by Carmichael, who is almost out six and out forward him. So to do that, you've got to be some player. Unfortunately for Harrow, that was his only game he played for him, because I think went up north and probably got paid reasonable sum of money to go and
silly
play cricket.
Silly money having that on your CV. 346. That's a ludicrous partnership.
But that was a bit of a really great rating for Eden Trailfinders. He didn't get, you know, didn't find life any easier after that game. So, but yeah, that was the one that also sort of stood out for me, that partnership. And just how destructive it must have been. It must have been balls getting lost and flying everywhere, because, as I said, Etienne is not a player to hang around, and if he's been outscored by Carmichael, then he must be even more destructive than he is.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that is a standout figure. Any more that caught your eye? Was there one more? I think I asked you for three. So you had your Steve Rheingold. We had 346. If any other numbers that caught your eye, for better or for worse?
Okay, I'll chuck in one here of the lowest batting average. Right? And it's going to be a tail ender, isn't it? So there's no harm in discussing this. Raghul Vetcherival, Pinner Challengers, 11 innings. So I kind of looked, the criteria for me was 10 innings or more. He's played 11 innings, or added 11 innings. Six not out, so he's quite hard to get out. He's no, absolutely no mug with a bat. High score of 4, and averages
1.40. 1.4. Okay, yeah. There is room for improvement there, Sal. I don't care where you're at. There's room for improvement. But
we're watching next season if we can get more than 4 runs in one game. That's his target.
We'll keep an eye on him. And of course, he's inside the bowl, isn't he? You know, fair play.
Yeah.
You know, Raghul would, I'm sure, say the batting is probably not his strong suit. But yeah, 1.4, okay. That's a number worth... Not, I think... Even I managed to average more than 1.4 in most of my seasons, I think. So we'll have a look how he gets on next year. If I were to pick out three, and there's loads that you could pick out from the website, there really is. I did like Abhishek Gagneja's 228 not out for London Super Kings. I mean, there's I individual scores, and then there's I individual scores. I mean, a double 100 in a limited overs game of cricket takes quite some doing. So that was a top score in the league this season, 228 out, London Super Kings in Division 6. So well played to Abhishek if he's listening. And also, I mean, I often think that scoring runs is sort of, you know, that's the glory part of it. But if you want to get promoted, you need to get people out. And if you get people out, then, you know, then ultimately you're going to be in a good position to win games even when you don't score runs. So if you look at the bowlers and who did what, then for me, you know, we're looking at someone like K+, not a team I knew much about, but they won the league, Division 4. And one of their bowlers, Jesh Kumar Patel, he averaged 8.05 with the ball. He took 20 wickets and averaged 8. And I bet the instinct is to look at who scored runs for K+. But I suspect if you've got a bowler taking wickets that frequently, then he's doing, then that's a big help. It's a big help for the team. Also, in terms of catchers, Steve McGiffin. That was my third one. He took 18 catches this year, Steve McGiffin. That's the highest in the league. When he's an outfield player, I don't think he kept it all. I wasn't aware that he was a keeper of any note. So 18 catches. So, I mean, I guess on average, that's one a game, which doesn't sound that dramatic. But it doesn't half help when people catch the ball. And I think having 18 catches in a season is a good... I've certainly got nowhere near 18 in a season. And I never felt... I always fielded quite close to the bat because I can't throw. So respect you to him for doing that. That's... For me, a decent effort. Cool. Anything else that caught your eye, Sal? Any other AOB before we wind things up?
Just on McGiffin, I know, I'm sure there's one game where he took 5.
I think that's right, yes.
Yeah, and he's right. a sip fielder, so he's in the action there, and if he's here on a regular basis. Just to come back to the points that you mentioned, so your man, Abhishek Gagneja, his innings actually was only 139 balls, so 228 of 139 balls, 34 fours and 8 sixes, and quickly come back to the Harrow guys. Actually, they were 27-2 at one point. So I thought Trailfire must be thinking life isn't too hard
in this
division. Yeah, we've got a chance here until these two rocked up and hit that mammoth partnership, which was...
Do you have the scorecard to hand? What did Harrow end up on? Because they must have ended up somewhere near 400.
So Harrow, I mean, I think they ended up three... I think it scored up right now in a second. It was nearing 400, obviously, just the body with Rondo scored. But both of them were just, you know, seeing the ball everywhere, I imagine. And the game was played on the first game of the season, actually. It was the first game. And Harrow scored 382 for 3. And Carroll Finders, obviously, were nowhere near that. But, yeah, Carmichael scored 188 off 140. He was 188 not out of 140 balls. And Etienne, 138 off 102 balls. So,
wow. Would have been worth watching, I have to say.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been fun. Definitely. Well, not if you're a Trail Founders fan, but anyone else, I'm sure we had a good time watching that. But yeah.
Absolutely. That was pretty
impressive. But yeah, that's my sort of highlights for the season.
Cool. Well, highlights in terms of numbers, but I was going to sort of round things up by just asking you, you know, what was your highlight of the season, Sal? And this can be a great performance. It can be just something that you'll always remember or something that you saw that was like just really left field or weird or nice. What would that highlight be?
Good question, Dan. Obviously, I've umpired a few games this year, so there were lots of good cricket that I saw. And, you know, there's so much talent and there's so much quality on show in the MCCL on a weekly basis. Oh, actually, for me, what was really good, actually, I did an MDL game and we had Michael Levitt from Stanmore batting. He's obviously came over and had a really good season. And Dave Burton was bowling to him. Now, Dave sort of plays the NDL stuff as a coach and to bring a young lad through. So he really is a sort of a mentor and a guardian-like kind of character. But he went and bowled a ball to Levitt, who I think maybe hit a boundary or did something. And he kind of realised this guy's a good player. And obviously, he knew who he was. And he really cranked it up. And it was really good battle between those two or three overs where, you know, you've got two top-class players going at each other. And Burton had the last half when he cleaned him up. I think it was second ball left of his spell. That I enjoyed, actually, from a personal level, just watching two top cricketers really fighting it out. But good, but, you know, respect for each other. And yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that as an umpire, just watching that and seeing how that was going to play out. So it seemed to be sort of a few more opportunities like that to come up again. But yeah, that was definitely my sort of, as a highlight. But again, you know, week in, week out, I mean, you know, as I said, I'd get home and watch sort of some clips on YouTube. And there were so many performances that took place, which are, you know, really, really good. And again, just highlights the quality we have in our league.
Yep. No, I'm the same. I can't name an individual performance or an individual game. There was so much that was fascinating that you're just randomly picking one that you happen to remember at the time. You know, there's so much good cricket out there. But the one story I heard that I liked, and there were loads of stories, and I'd really encourage people to let us know about these so that we can talk about them. I don't know if you remember, but Harris St Mary's Fours were playing in time cricket, and they were 87 for 9. And the skipper of Harris St Mary's Fours said, "Pitch is not great. Number 11's rubbish. Sod it, we'll declare." And so he declared at 87 with, you know, which not that many runs, basically because he didn't think his number 11 was going to score any. And they ended up winning by one run, bowled the oppo out, 86 all out. And I just thought that cricket is a ridiculous sport in many ways. And we love it for that ridiculousness, because declaring on 87 and winning by one run, the bloke's a genius, isn't he?
Yep.
You know, what a call. And I've never heard of anything like that before. But I thought that was a nice story. And I'll remember that one moving forward. And Tony Wright was the man who filled me in with the details of that. Harris St Mary's legend there. But that type of thing is the type of thing I like more than anything in cricket. The odd idiosyncrasies that you don't really get in other sports. Cool. So I'll let you go. We've covered a whole range of issues there, and we could have covered plenty more. Just one last thing about our agenda for the winter. We will be speaking to various folks through the winter, right? We're not going to vanish completely for the next 31 weeks, but probably, am I right in saying once a month or so?
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. I mean, if time's not an issue really on my part. I mean, we don't want to bombard people during the winter, so, and also keep Eugene stressed out all the emails.
Continues to do all of the fantastic work.
I mean, must mention Eugene for the work he does off the scenes. It's fantastic. You know, he's involved in other stuff as well, which he does as well. So the fact he just takes time to do this is brilliant. And without him, this podcast would not take place. We could be Eugene to mention. Yeah, it's hopefully, like you said, Dan, once a month would be good. Just to add to as well, we should be at the dinner. So if you do see us, please be kind to us and come over and say hello.
We didn't mean whatever we said, honestly.
Yeah, it was Dan's fault. He told me to say it.
Yeah, that's
but yeah, definitely, yeah. So we look forward to that.
Cool. And we are open to ideas about things that we should talk about, you know, whether it's people to speak to. And we've got one or two ideas of our own, but we'll obviously move those forward in due course. But open to all suggestions if you have any. In the meantime, Sal, have a good 2 or 3 weeks and we'll reconvene at Lords.
Cheers, Dan. See you soon, mate. Yeah.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.